If you're gonna play in Texas, you gotta have a fiddle in the band. That lead guitar is hot, but not for Louisiana man.
Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game on this Wednesday, and every Wednesday at this time, we say hello to our favorite Texan, John McClain, who is on the line with us. HoustonTexans.com is where you can find his work. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you? Hope you had a great Thanksgiving and happy holidays to you and all your listeners.
Absolutely. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving as well. Before we get into the NFL stuff, I'm just curious of your thoughts of this 12-team college football playoff and, you know, the rankings that have come out. They don't matter until Sunday night. That's when the final ones will come out. But what's kind of been your thought on this, and how do you feel about the Longhorns in their first year in the SEC, and can they win the SEC on Saturday?
Well, first of all, I read and watch everything I possibly can about the college football playoff, and no matter how controversial it is, no matter who ends up being disappointed, the level of attention it's generated has been great for the sport, and I think it was brilliant. They'll end up making it a bigger field, and there'll still be controversy. And as far as the Longhorns, it's very interesting. I'll look at all the projections. It looks like they can play Georgia three times, and if they beat them in the SEC championship game, then it would come down to they'd be 1-1. Then they could play in the second round. That would be unbelievable, unprecedented, I believe, in college sports, especially two such good teams. The thing that I've been reading, Alabama does not deserve to be in the 12. Now, I know a lot of your listeners will disagree because of the losses. You can't get killed at Oklahoma and get in there. And I feel terrible for Miami. Miami, it's just amazing. Miami fell, losing a closer game than Ohio State did, blowing a game. They were favored by 21, but it is so much fun to watch. I can't wait. And what I can't understand now, some teams are going to be penalized for playing in their conference championships,
yep,
and teams that did not because they lost are going to be able to take advantage of it. And I know the people on the committee say we're not going to hold it against them because they had to play an extra game, but you know they will. And so I can't wait for this weekend, I can't wait to see. I'm stunned. Are y'all surprised Texas and Georgia's not the primetime game, which is always the one that's the highest rated? I am.
Yeah, I am too. I don't know if they just stuck with tradition and keeping it in the afternoon, which is kind of where it's been. But yeah, I agree. I mean, the Big Ten is going to be a good one, but I would have thought that the SEC would have been the featured game.
To me, the most underrated team in the country is SMU. SMU's yep. lost one close game, but because they came out of nowhere, you know, they were nothing, then they bought their way into the ACC. They go to the ACC and they're not getting money, TV money for years. And SMU is one of the wealthiest schools in the country. And all those wealthy alums are just looking for a reason to write multi-million dollar checks. So within 1 week, they raised all the money that they would be getting if they were a full-fledged member from TV, from the conference in a week. And they don't draw a lot of fans. They didn't sell out the game last week, a lot because the students were gone. But it's cowboy country they play in, of course. But SMU's got a quarterback, Jennings, who is outstanding, one of the most underrated. And I'm so sick of hearing Dabo Swinney whining at the podium. My God, I want to just, like he said, oh, y'all thought we were a bad team. I'd love for a reporter to say, Dabo, when did somebody call you a bad team? Tell us when and who. Well, he'd be like Porky Pig. He'd be up there blah, 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 because nobody's called Clemson a bad team. I want them to get beat so bad to shut him up because SMU, Rhett Lashley, is a first-class coach who's done an outstanding job. Nobody's talking about him for Coach of the Year, and that guy has been tremendous. So I can't wait for these games, and I hate to see, like, if Boise State got beat. and deprived us of Ashton Jenny. They've already beaten UNLV. I watched it. I've watched a lot of Ashton Jenny's games because they come on late, and I love watching that kid. I've told you guys before, he reminds me of Barry Sanders when he was at Oklahoma State. And I would hate to see some of the teams that were dominant be penalized for playing in their championship game.
I know an NFL team in Texas that could use his services, you know, come this spring. But
and you know what? The fact is, he grew up. He was his dad was military, so he was an Army brat, and he was born in Italy, and his family moved around, and he went to high school and played in the stadium that's on the Cowboys' practice site in Frisco, a wealthy suburb. And that stadium seats 12,000. It's indoors, and that's where he played. So, my goodness, wouldn't that be something if the Cowboys drafted him? Now, they're going to fool around and win too many games. They've won two. They got two in a row, I think. And so they're going to fool around and not get him because most people think with this new emphasis on running backs, it makes a guy like Ashton Jenny more valuable. And so I'll be glad if he doesn't drop to the Cowboys.
I want to get back to them in a second, but Azeez Al-Shaair gets three games. He's going to appeal it. What did you think of the hit? What did you think of his response after it and then the NFL's response in suspending him three games?
Well, I'm glad you pronounced his name right. You had a lot of practice last year. So many people are calling him Shaair, and I put a thing out on Twitter and say it's one syllable. It's not Shaair. Anyway, I've done so many shows now, I don't correct them. I just say, hey, Azeez Al-Shaair. Okay, I thought it was a dirty hit, and he should have been ejected, and he should have been suspended. I thought one game, max two, cut back to one on appeal. And afterward, you know, he's never been ejected from a game. And I was told by, well, Nick, your great producer, that he didn't have a controversial season there last year. And he's not going to change the way he plays because that's helped him come from nowhere to make millions of dollars on this contract he signed with the Texans instead of re-signing with the Titans because he wanted to be reunited with D'Amico Ryans, who ghosted him in San Francisco. So I thought afterward when the players, the Jaguars, came and jumped on him, which they should have, and in his apology the next day, he said he didn't blame them for doing that. He would have done the same thing. Then D'Amico Ryans comes out strong, and yesterday Nick Caserio ripped the league like I've never seen. They never say he shouldn't be suspended. And what D'Amico said is he got on the Jaguars, and I tweeted when D'Amico – I covered every D'Amico Ryans game at practice. And if that had happened to Matt Schaub when he played and it was close to the – Texans sideline, D'Amico would have been the first person out there jumping on the perpetrator. But remember, when coaches talk to the media, they're not talking to us. They're talking to the players. They're giving a message to the players, and they wanted Azeez Al-Shaair to know they have his back, and they want him to know that they support him. They want the other players to know that as well. So when you see Ryan saying that, he doesn't care what we think or the Jaguars think or the league thinks. He cares about what his locker room thinks. And he got a lot of criticism for saying the Jaguars shouldn't have come out there on the field and started the fight. And then, of course, Al-Shaair ripped somebody's helmet off. That guy, he never backs down. In the second game of the year against the Bears, Caleb Williams running along the sideline. Al-Shaair just drilled him. He was in bounds. Could he have let up? Sure, he could have let up. That's not his style. He drilled him. It was on the Bears' sideline. The Bears were all over him. He came up swinging. Always the dumbest thing in football, other than lining up to the neutral zone, which I always call a brain dead penalty, is when you're throwing punches at guys with helmets on. But he did. He hit a guy. And so people use that as an example of a dirty play. Well, it wasn't penalized, and he didn't get fined for that one. And so Nick Caserio came out yesterday and blasted the league for inconsistency in suspensions. And he gave a lot of examples of guys who were ejected, weren't suspended, and they were multiple offenders. And Al-Shaair has never been ejected, and he's never been suspended. And he had a point, and he just tore John Runyon up. John Runyon began his career here, moved with the Oilers to Tennessee. Then he had his biggest games in Philly, and he was the dirtiest player in the NFL. So I wrote, he's the best guy to be the head cop for the league because who knows dirty better than John Runyon? And it's been hilarious. People are going on YouTube and getting all these dirty hits by Runyon and putting him out there. And, oh, man, he was doing that from his rookie year. And it's been hilarious. These flying leaps over piles to hit players in the head. It was amazing. But anyway, he ripped him because of the way Runyon worded it. He never talked Al Shire. He talked about his disregard for the game, made him sound like a criminal, and he's never even met him. So that's what Caserio was doing. Now, he's gone for three. He's appealed it. They come off the bye, and in a 10-day span, they play Miami here at Kansas City, Baltimore here on Christmas Day. And right now, he missed all three of those games, and he's one of their best players in the captain. They're hoping at least it gets cut down to two. And one more thing, because I've been retweeting these things for 3 days. It's amazing to me all the players coming out on the side of Al Shire, including Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers. It's weird seeing quarterbacks talking about it and about the slides. And nobody's better than Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen at faking slides. Players hold up, and they keep running for gains.
He is John McClain from Houston. We'll have more with him coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game on this Wednesday, continuing our discussion with John McClain.
John, the Titans go up to Washington and play terrible, and some of the guys complained because it was cold, but it was the comment from Jeffrey Simmons, John, about perhaps we were still hung over from last week's win. Look, I appreciate the honesty coming from Jeffrey Simmons, but if you're going to tell me you lose a game because you're hung over because you beat another team, I'm not going to accept that. And a lot of Titans fans aren't happy with that. What do you think about that comment, John?
Well, first of all, it's 42 degrees and guys are acting like they're cold. My goodness, I've never heard that. Wait till it's really cold. I remember when they went to Kansas City and won a playoff game, and it was single digits, right? Nobody's complaining about that. And, yes, it was a big win for them here. It was a very impressive performance on defense and with Will Levis. But, you know, that's excusable. You'd think they'd be extra fired up and extra motivated to increase and win a second consecutive game. Then they go up and get down 21-0 in the first quarter. So for whatever reason, they were not ready to play. Here, we blasted the Texans after they lost because the Titans scored on their first three possessions. In other words, the Texans were not ready to play. They came out flat. That's a sign of poor coaching, poor preparation, be blamed on the players. Now, they made a game out of it, and the Titans won it. But I didn't think the Titans would beat the Commanders, but I'm like you guys. I thought it'd be a whole lot better game.
John, I wanted to throw this stat at you. So Terry McCormick, who's covered the team, you know, since they got here, put this out. Will Levis' last four games projected out over a 17-game season. 302 of 489, a 61.9 completion percentage, 30 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, 4,080 yards. Obviously haven't, you know, there's still things he's got to work on, but it has looked much better the last four games. What's kind of your thoughts on that and trying to look at it from a 17-game point of view?
Well, one thing you got to look at is, like, I think there have been two games where they've gotten their brains beat in, but his stats look good.
Right.
And so when you get pounded like they did at Washington and you have two touchdowns and no interceptions, that's good. But what were the circumstances? Did he play well and receivers drop passes? Was the blockers do a terrible job on the run? They couldn't run the ball because they fell behind so much in the first quarter. So you need to look at every possible positive stat you can with Levis. And we all know the thing is, you hope as he gets older, he will learn to get rid of the ball quicker, and which will help him cut back on turnovers. But the key is he's still competing to try to get the job next year, I would guess. But it's not a good season. It's not a good time for quarterbacks. So what if the time that the draft comes around and say three or four of them are rated high? Remember, everything that goes on during the college season, NFL teams don't admit this, but it counts very little toward the draft. They're more interested in what they do in Senior Bowl practices, the combine. Look at Anthony Richardson. Nobody talked about Anthony Richardson, even though they knew he was coming out at Florida. Y'all saw him in the SEC. Couldn't even complete 55 or 58% of his passes, and then all of a sudden he's Superman because of the combine. So Senior Bowl workouts, combine, pro days, and private workouts. And if you can make such a good impression on a team, like you're at lunch and dinner with a coach and a general manager, and they fall in love with your personality, you know, even though they want to keep it on the talent and the potential, it's hard not to fall in love with a guy. So there's a lot of quarterbacks out there that could be rated up there right behind Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward. And so what if the Titans have a chance to draft one they like? Do they take him, or do they think, you know what, we can win with Will? And that's going to – big part of that's going to be Brian Callahan, of course. And I would imagine his dad will be very influential. And then Rand Carthon, who's the one that has to draft the guy and put his reputation on the line. And so – that's going to be the best part of the offseason. If they do ride with Levis another year, maybe they'll draft another offensive lineman in the first round.
Talking to John McClain here on the Chasing Big Joe Show. John, after Matt Eberflus was fired on Friday, a lot of people are like, that's a great landing spot for Mike Vrabel. But one we don't talk about, John, is that one of Vrabel's best friends is now co-owner of the Las Vegas Raiders. Could you see a scenario, John, Mike Vrabel to the Raiders if they let go of Antonio Pierce?
Keep this in mind. When you fire a defensive coach, you almost always go offensive. And Eberflus is a defensive coach. They got a good defense. They need to rebuild their offensive line, which shouldn't be difficult. That is a premier job, as long as you don't mind freezing your ass off half the season. And so I think they will go after Ben Johnson or Cliff Kingsbury. Kingsbury coached Caleb Williams at USC for a season and called the plays. So I think they'll go for that. Now, does Ben Johnson want to go there? You can't pick a better team that has a quarterback, running backs, receiver, tight end, has a good defense. Usually those jobs aren't open. So I think that would be a premier job over, say, like Jacksonville or even the Cowboys, because you got to work for Jerry Jones. And I think Mike will get a job. You know, Antonio Pierce, 1 year as an interim last year, they're awful. I think Mike would be great there. I think a team that needs a guy to kick some serious butt, that Vrabel will be good. I can see Jerry Jones going after Mike. And because once you talk to Vrabel, you guys know how impressive he is. I always wanted to see him and Dan Campbell get in the octagon and go at it with Jerry. And so, and Brady, yeah, I watched Texans have joint practices in when the Texans were at the Greenbrier in West Virginia, and the Patriots came in for 2 days. And so I had a great seat in the grandstands and the end zone where I could see both teams' practices. And boy, Vrabel and Brady were yucking it up and everything. You could tell that they were buddies, not just because he caught all those touchdown passes from Brady, but if they decided to move on, I'm sure that he'd be a coach they'd interview. Mark Davis has the final say, but why put Tom Brady in your organization if you're not going to listen to it?
Yeah, 100%. John, great stuff as always. We will see what happens this weekend and talk next week.
Guys, thank you very much. I appreciate it as always, and happy holidays to everyone in Nashville.
Thank you, sir. John McClain joining us here on the program. HoustonTexans.com is where you can find his work. We'll react to some of that and go back into the Titans. Coming up next, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.